And there I am. There y'all are. Oh, look at the audio going through. Sorry you missed the intro, and that was probably the funniest thing I have ever said in my life, and it wouldn't be funny if I said it twice, so I'm sorry. That's my fault. We'll just have to get through. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. We call it conversation radio here. An opportunity to cuss and discuss and be heard. And, well, it's radio unlike any other. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, by the way. And what better thorn in the side than a quick recap of last night's Dragnet pageant? Dum, 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 dum. Because there was plenty of dum. But it really does look like Mr. Congeniality and Mr. Oh My God, No Really Dumb goes to Rick Goodhair Perry, seen in a now fast-becoming eponymous photo, grabbing the arm of poor little squirrely-ass, half-crazy, anarcho-Randian Rand Paul. Ron Paul, sorry. I was confusing the crazy old coot daddy with the crazy young coot son. And no, that's Ron Paul, libertarian gynecologist or general practitioner. I don't remember. And then he's got the goofy son in Kentucky, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. No, but it was during a commercial break that Rick Perry went up and grabbed his fellow Texan's arm and began wagging his index finger at him. God, who's Rick Perry think he is? Stephen Colbert? Now, over on the strange and weirdly cultish Ron Paul website, it was described as, oh goodness me, where is it? During a commercial break at Wednesday's Republican debate, Rick Perry and Ron Paul continued their spirited exchange on stage. Suddenly, ta-da-da, Perry grabbed Ron Paul's forearm while aggressively pointing his index finger toward the congressman's face. Alerted by Perry's menacing gestures, Ron Paul's bodyguard was standing by, ready to protect the congressman. Oh, for pity's sakes. But no, there was stupid and lots of it to go around. And really, really, the vast majority of the stupid was owned by, well, are we surprised? Rick Perry. Saying all manner of just really batshit crazy things. Things like, Texas wouldn't have as many uninsured people if it weren't for the federal government. Yeah, the federal government is... Right. Sure. There was also, the folks over at Think Progress did a very good job pulling together a brief, ever so brief, compendium of stupid from last night. Because, you know, really, you can't say things, well, you know, I disagree with them, but I respect it. No. You can't respect these freaks. The modern incarnation of the Republican Party really is not entitled to any because they're talking about crazy things.
Governor, quick follow. Why are so many people in Texas uninsured?
Well, bottom line is that we would not have that many people uninsured in the state of Texas if you didn't have the federal government.
Do you advocate getting rid of the minimum wage? Would that create more jobs?
Absolutely. And it would help the poor, the people who need a job.
Anybody that's for the status quo with Social Security today is involved with a monstrous lie. It is a Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme. For the President of the United States to go to El Paso, Texas, and say that the border is safer than it's ever been, either he has some of the poorest intel of a president in the history of this country, or he was an abject liar to the American people. And I tell him, I said, just because you have a group of scientists that have stood up and said, here is the fact, Galileo got outvoted for a spell.
Galileo got outvoted for a spell? Rick Perry thinks he's Galileo? I mean, we both heard the same thing, didn't we? Galileo came near to being murdered by Holy Mother Church for suggesting crazy stuff like the Earth revolves around the sun, and not the sun revolves around the earth. I mean, anybody can... All you have to do is stand outside from morning till evening, and you can see that the sun obviously revolves around the earth. It comes up in the east, it goes down in the west. It happens every day. Now, granted, those crazy old Greeks, they thought that's because Apollo was pulling it on some celestial chariot. Silly, silly people. When we all know that the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, because it says so right in his book, made the earth to revolve around, made the sun to revolve around the earth. That was the one that really grabbed me. Well, Galileo got outvoted for a while. Galileo was right. And the people outvoting him and threatening to kill him and putting him under house arrest for the rest of his natural born days were the faith-based people like Rick Perry. The folks at Think Progress noting, no questions tonight about gay rights, abortion, or influence of money in elections. Iraq was mentioned once during tonight's debate. We're spending, believe it or not, this blew my mind when I read it, Ron Paul said, $20 billion a year for air conditioning in Afghanistan and Iraq in the tents over there. At 9:44 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, there was something very disturbing. And that was the fact that the audience, that weird, weird audience, broke out into thunderous applause when pageant host Brian Williams made note of the fact that Rick Goodhair Perry has executed more than 234 people on Texas's death row. Yeah. They applauded that. That would include applause for the murder. Because, you know what, when you get a state execution wrong, we're talking about murder. That would include the execution of the murder of an innocent man. The man's name is Willingham. Willingham. The conviction was one that exists... in which evidence existed only in the mind of the prosecuting attorney. Clear, convincing evidence of non-guilt was laid before Rick Perry. And his response? To shut down the commission that had been investigating the case and go ahead and kill the man. But he says, no, he's never... struggled at all or lost a night's sleep over having ordered the murder of an innocent man. Of course, I guess that means he'd be a great president, at least under the Bush standard. How many innocents are dead at the hands of George W. Bush? 1 million? Something like that, conservatively estimated? Yeah, a million. Rick Goodhair Perry's been in office for about 11 years. Cameron Todd Willingham was likely not only not guilty but innocent of the death of his three daughters. But Perry had him killed anyway. He has commuted 31 death sentences. 28 of those only because he was compelled to do so by the Supreme Court when it outlawed executing juveniles. There have, however, during Rick Perry's governorship, been 10 executions of people who were mentally disabled. People testifying that they had devices planted in their... one fellow who said the military planted devices in his head. Yeah, that kind of crazy. James Clark went to the horizontal crucifix in Huntsville, Texas. His final statement was, "Howdy." So I guess that makes puts Rick Perry in the role of George and James Clark in the role of Lenny. "When are you going to tell me about the rabbits, George?" This guy's a bloodthirsty freak. He is a very, very, very sick man. And he proved it up and down all over the place last night. At some point, I don't know, maybe I'll try to find a guest to come on the program. This is one of those things where it's worth having a guest on the program to talk about the Cameron Todd Willingham's murder at the hands of Rick Perry. You know, when you go to law school, on the first day of 1L, they start teaching you really corny aphorisms and sayings and so forth. And one of the first ones they teach you is, "Hard cases make bad law." Because Cameron Todd Willingham was not, arguably not the best guy in the world. And he had a nasty relationship with his ex-wife. But he did not burn his three precious daughters alive. What was he convicted on? An overzealous Texas Hang'em High prosecutor squealing in a courtroom about how his... "Well, he had Metallica posters on his wall, and the fire, we found in the fire something looked like a pentagram. He's a Satan devil worshiper." What is it about Texas? You know, here's a guy who demands that the entire state pray for rain from his Lord Jeebus. The rain doesn't come, of course. But that same Jesus who he claims to worship, who went willingly to his own unjust execution. See, how can you revere Jesus and be in favor of capital punishment? "Well, they did it to him. It's good enough for Cameron Todd Willingham." You know, there are so many reasons that Christianity is a dying religion on the planet today. And the sooner the better, in my book. But Rick Perry is an awfully good example. But, like father, like son, what was her name? Carla Faye Tucker? You do still remember the name of Carla Faye Tucker, don't you? Write her name down right now, right next to Cameron Todd Willingham. Carla Faye Tucker, well, Carla Faye was guilty. but every single individual involved with her imprisonment said that she had completely turned her life around. She had dedicated her life to Jesus Christ. People who don't even go to bat for prisoners went to bat for Carla Faye Tucker when George W. Bush was governor of Texas. He signed her death warrant with a merry twinkle in his eye. And after it was over, joked to his staff about how she had begged for her life.
Yeah, she said, please don't kill me. Yeah, we got her some Texas justice.
Same with Cameron Todd Willingham, except for the fact that he did not commit the murders of which he was accused. The longer this Perry candidacy continues, the more we are finding out what a, and I mean no insult to anyone who lives in Texas or calls Texas home or the place of their birth, but Texas, a liberal in Texas would probably be the first to agree with me. I would bet that Texas Betsy would agree. I would bet that Cassie would agree. I would bet that Edward would agree. I would bet that the horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, God knows, would agree. Texas is probably the most dysfunctional state in the Union. Burning up, and unable to adequately respond to wildfires because Rick Perry's government slashed firefighting funding 75% this year. Not really. Or, let's see, you know, we talked a little bit about September 11th, 2001 last night. I've got an example of what I was talking about you know, the orgifying it and turning it into something sick and disgusting. But in the years following the attacks of September 11th, 2001, to one degree or another, every state in the Union bellied up to the trough, and it was root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest. And it was a mad struggle to get not only the front trotters, but the back ones in the trough, too. Texas succeeded with getting all four trotters in the trough to the tune of $1.7 billion federal government dollars from the Department of Homeland Security during the time when Rick Perry, who hates federal government intervention, was in the governor's office. $1.7 billion. Where'd the money go? Well, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram wanted to know, too. And they examined thousands of purchases using that Homeland Security money. As carried out by fiscally conservative right-wing repiglickin' Rick Perry. There was $21. That's $21 for a fish tank in Seguin. That's $21. On the other hand, there was $24,000 for a latrine on wheels in Fort Worth. And then, in what can only be called another one of those moments where the god of irony just hands you a little bit of deliciousness, I mean, you want to talk about pork barrel spending, there was a hog catcher purchased with Homeland Security money in Liberty County, Texas. I don't even know what a hog catcher is. I probably don't want to know either. Don't ruin my bacon for me, okay? Thank you. There's just not that much left in my life. Just pleasure. Bacon's one of them. No, a hog catcher. There were also, you know, I browse car lots from time to time. Not that I'm going to buy one. but I do. And I look at the nice ones, not just the things that are utilitarian and practical. And so it was that we were browsing along on a car lot, I guess, last Saturday. And we'd looked at Impalas and Malibus and things like that, mostly used. And Ferg just says, Dad, and Doodle was with me too. Dangerous combination, those two. Ferg says, Dad, reckon they've got any Camaros? Camaro being a Native American word meaning you're making too much money, fill this thing up again. I forget who first said that. And I said, probably in the showroom, son. And Doodle said, yay! Oh, no. And yeah, they did. There were two Camaros sitting in the showroom of this particular dealership. One black and one arrest me red convertible. Doodle gravitated to the arrest me red convertible like a moth drawn to a light. Ferg split in the opposite direction, drawn to the hardtop graphite black one. Doodle looked at the red one and said, oh, look, Daddy, it's got one of those things where you don't have to shift gears. Honey, that's called an automatic transmission. Yeah, one of those. That's not a blonde dye job on my youngest daughter. Bless her. Love her so much. You know, she has a razor-sharp wit. But every now and then, you get one. It's got one of those adorable little thingies where you don't have to shift gears. Ferg, on the other hand, was thrilled that the black hardtop he was looking at had a 6-speed manual transmission. The convertible was somewhere around 45 large. The hardtop, and I sided with Ferg, I would have gone with the hardtop. You get better handling out of them to the extent that you get any handling out of a Camaro at all. Get better handling out of a hard top because it's the whole it's structurally stiffer. The hard top was 38 large. Now, why this little diversion? Let me explain. The Rick Perry Texas government, in order to keep America safe from the tourists, spent $30,884 each for a matched set of two 2011 Camaros used in Cleburne County border enforcement. No, really. Border enforcement. Whatever happened to the days of, I don't know, when I was a kid, there was a show on TV, I think it was on CBS, set in Arizona, starring Glenn Ford. My God, what an actor he was. And what a Second World War hero he was as well. Navy, I believe. But Glenn Ford played this desert county sheriff. And he went zooming and zipping and bouncing and banging all over the wilds of some Arizona border county. In, come on, it's America, it's the 1970s, a Jeep! A Jeep. The hell else would you use? I also happened to grow up during the days of Rat Patrol. Again, Jeeps. Well, except for the Germans, they had these, you know, spiffy Mercedes and stuff. Oh, but not Cleburne County, Texas. No, no, no. Sheriff, what we need to catch up with them Mexicans is a couple of nice little Camaros. because you know when we're off duty, the honeys down to the beer joint thinks them's mighty sexy. Really? Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Fish tanks, hog catchers, latrines on wheels, matched set of Camaros for chasing down illegal immigrants, who are oddly enough usually on foot. Did I mention that Camaros are not worth a damn off-road? Because they're still rear-wheel drive and everything. Not worth up in the sand, not worth in the mud. Not, no. Just sit there and spin in that dirt while you know, the illegal aliens are getting away on foot. Walking! The Fort Worth Star-Telegram audit reached the conclusion that Texas had doled out Homeland Security monies. And you know how it always is. Whatever community you're in, there's some little crappy-ass newspaper. And there's a picture of some Rick Perry administration official with one of them great big Happy Gilmore golf checks for, in say, you know, a matched set of Camaros for border enforcement. But the monies were passed along, quote, without adequately defined goals and objectives to strengthen preparedness and response to attacks or disasters. Well, you know, if the Muslims blow up the stockyard down there, we're going to need to be able to respond mighty fast, Mr. Governor. And there ain't nothing but, well, could we have a Corvette? I don't think we should ask for a Corvette. A Camaro will do nicely. That rolling latrine, $24,275. Another city spent $441 on a collapsible toilet. Oh, what's a hog catcher? It will be used to aid in catching and controlling unruly swine at holding sites. I'm working on a Texas accent here. It's not the same as a southern accent. Shouldn't that application have at least said aid in catching and controlling unruly Muslim terrorist swine? Or terrorist Mexican swine? No, not so much. Then, in a real giggler, and this kind of goes into the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, the Koch brothers' pipeline, too. McClatchy Newspapers also wrote on this issue, and they said, while state officials have been abusing Department of Homeland Security funds, remember the motto of the Bush administration, it's your money. Quote, the Congressional Research Service has reported that likely terrorist targets, the nation's 500,000 miles of oil and gas pipelines, have been left vulnerable. Yeah, but by God, if there's a problem with them in Cleburne County, we can jump in our Camaros and be right there real quick as long as there's paved road by it. Oops. David in Tennessee, as ever, helping me out of the little pits of ignorance that I stumble into from time to time. Bob, here in Tennessee, we have the occasional offending feral cat, or maybe the more rare raccoon that lights it in the city. Well, the animal control types set a smallish trap. Offending animal goes away with the man in the white pick-em-up truck. Now, down in Tejas way, they got some a thing called a javelina. Now that now that Tejas is building where they never did before, them very, very wild, mean, toothy pigs can lay waste to a brand new suburban neighborhood containing McMansions by the scores. So, Bob, you needs a trap the size of a small car to contain one of them toothy pigs. Now, whatever the F that has to do with that national security thingy, your guess is as good as some guy from New York City. New York City? Get a rope. Yeah, I have a feeling Juanita is having the same conniption that I had when reading this story. Jesus. Now that's not to say Jeeps are cheap. But I would not be sitting here covering this story if it had been a Jeep. Hell, if it had been a 4x4 Hummer, I would not be doing this story. Because while they are gas guzzlers, if you live in a rural place with lots of rural space, they have a use. You know, I mean, it's like living down way down south where, you know, you get an inch of snow every 3 years. And you see those suburban mamas driving around in their four-wheel drive Cadillac Escalades because somehow the hubby feels like she's more safe in it. Usually has a Jesus fish on the back and a Yaller ribbon if they're stuck. Do we still have Yaller ribbons on cars anymore? Right. But in a place like this, you know, West Virginia, Appalachia, there is a real need for such things. Because off-road is not necessarily always somewhere that you wind up by intent. Sometimes it's where you live. And while I don't care if it's four-wheel drive or 12-wheel drive, ain't nobody can do nothing on ice. Four-wheel drive will get you through snow reasonably safely. Yeah, no snow and ice in Kleberg County, I don't reckon. Of course, I don't know where Kleberg County is. But if it was for border enforcement, I gotta figure it had something to do with the border. I mean, I'm just making the bald-faced assumptions here. So I'm figuring they don't just get a heck of a lot of snow. Or ice. Some, probably. Unless they're talking about the border with another county, and they can get so cantankerous down there, they can hate each other from county to county, but watch high school football in Texas on any given Friday night. But breathtaking, isn't it? And to stand there, bald-faced, and talk about how someone is a liar if they advocate that Social Security can be safe and sound. It was stunning. And, of course, there's something else going on this evening. In fact, it's going on in about 24 minutes, and I don't know. Everybody else can watch it, except me, because I'm here. We may have to just check in with President Not Sure on his big... I mean, who knows? We could be surprised. He may announce a broad-sweeping FDR-esque jobs program that'll leave us all simply stunned. No matter what he proposes, we do know this. It is going to be a great speech. So maybe we'll check in. Speaking of the president, Paul Brown of Georgia, who is now a mainstream Republican, appeared on Fox and Friends this morning, and he said he ain't going to attend no speech by that one in the House of Representatives because he wants to be able to live tweet it to his followers. He said, I think it's better for me to sit in the office and watch it on TV where I can communicate with my constituents. Really? Is that some sort of Homeland Security crackdown that doesn't involve Camaros? You can't get wireless service in the seats there in the House of Representatives? No, anybody want to volunteer to watch Paul Brown's tweets tonight? Because I imagine he'll be percolating pretty good. A little bit of raw corn liquor. I mean, you've heard Paul Brown on the floor of the House when he sounds like he's had more than a little snootful, right? Yeah, where it's not. Yeah, it's not the hair of the dog that bit you, because he ate the whole. He drank the whole dog. That's not sitting well with folks like John Cornyn, crazy John Cornyn of Texas. In an attempt to make the Republican Party not look like a complete gang of asses, he said, "We owe it to the office of the presidency to show up." Speaker of the House, John Boehner, is encouraging, not demanding, not commanding, but encouraging. Now, by God, if it's about voting against a piece of legislation that the president wants, he can demand, he can arm twist. But no, tonight he's just encouraging. He's just encouraging members of his caucus not to boycott President Not Sure's speech. Issued a statement saying, hold on there a little. We ought to be respectful, and we ought to welcome him. So let's do. We'll welcome him. I'll personally give him a glass of wine if I have any left. Give it back. You drank some. You dirties. I saw you. But that's coming up in very short order. Oh, God, David's in rare form tonight. Snow in Cleburne County, Texas. The last time they saw that was the free screening of It's a Wonderful Life at the movie house that was torn down to make way for the new Walmart. Yeah, did I tell you I'm not feeling real good? Not because I'm not. But you know what? A little laugh can make you feel ever so much better. Like Sandra's, you missed it because I didn't have the right button pushed. Sandra's caption for Rick Perry grabbing the arm of Ron Paul last night. Don't hit me, MF-er. I promise there are no drugs being used in the production of this program. Don't hit. Oh, God. We'll get through. We'll get through. So, we got the speech coming tonight, and I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say this. Is there any point to this speech considering the nature of the House of Representatives? Is this just another manifestation of the ongoing misguided optimism that somehow, some way, someday, tomorrow, the Republicans are actually going to work with Barack Obama? Because I don't see it. I had a Twitter exchange with an individual yesterday who referenced an article saying that the teabaggers want to go back to the Articles of Confederation. And because of all the vast amount of information that I have received as a result of being able to sit in and broadcast the PRISM West Virginia, that's PRISMWV, lecture series that Dr. Bill O'Brien invited us to work on. I understand now that the Articles of Confederation were not necessarily the big failure that they have historically been presented to be. That the Articles of Confederation failed, in fact, because certain states, like South Carolina, wanted the Articles of Confederation to fail. And so, in a bold attempt to be succinct, where it is almost impossible for me to be succinct, I tweeted back to Token 12 Gauge, Token 12 GA, "Democratic institutions are predicated on the good faith of participants. When that breaks down, so does the system, and thus you get John Boehner." And isn't that what we have here? Is there any among us, are there any among us, who harbors even the remotest shred of hope that whatever it is that Barack Obama proposes by way of putting America back to work, that anyone inside that lunatic asylum that is the Republican Party will cross over and vote with Democrats in good faith? Is one? I feel like that Greek philosopher wandering around with that stupid lantern in his hand looking for one honest man. Is there one decent Republican who would do that? I mean, for crying out loud, last night in that debate, you had Ron Paul blithering along about what we need is some gold money. Did you know that you can buy a gallon of gas with a silver dime? You can. It's worth $3.50. It really is. Yeah, what we need to do is go back to the precious metal standards. Then we'll be so poor we want. Then we'll be poorer than Job's turkey and brokered than the Ten Commandments. But we'll have a surreal money system. The American dollar's failing. Did I mention I was in the doctor's office today? I was. I sat there for about 4 hours. Not complaining, except for this. What medical good does it serve to have patients in a waiting room being droned at by Fox News? They went to a commercial break, and I heard this voice that I recognized, and it was slightly, I didn't have my glasses on, and I couldn't quite see the screen, but I heard this voice that I've learned over the years to despise. Say, walking past inflatable blow-up thingies. The jobs market. Deflated. And he flips the thing and it goes... The housing market. Destroyed. And then he comes up to this big pink pig. He says, the American dollar. Flips the thing. And it deflates. Worthless. That's why you, my friends, need to buy gold. It was G. Gordon Liddy. a man who tried to overthrow the government of the United States, walking free on the face of planet Earth in the year 2011, saying that the dollar, the American dollar, is worthless. And Ron Paul agrees. And a bunch of other creepy Republicans agree. Now, I know Barack Obama wants him a compromise. Oh, he wants him a compromise worse than I wanted a pony for Christmas when I was a little boy. But who's he going to get it from? As is my wont, I always I go over and check to see if there's a new page up at bartcop.com, BARTCOP.com. Yesterday I got the laugh of the day from Bart. A new take on the everybody's used those electric hand dryers. The instructions say press button, rub hands briskly under air. And it used to be that you'd see where some wise ass had scraped it through and said, for the final instruction, wipe hands on pants. Well, now there's a, because America is becoming fast becoming an illiterate nation, there's now another diagram there that shows the thumb pushing the button. And then the second one is the hands under, and there are these wavy red lines coming down. And someone had taken a Sharpie and said, and written on it, press button, and then for picture two, receive bacon. I laughed a good long while at that. Well, I didn't laugh as much at this editorial cartoon on today's Bart Cop page because it had a little too much of the ring of truth. It is a note being read by some bemused American. The note says, to whom it may concern, I am being held prisoner by the Republicans. I have learned to roll over, sit up, and beg. Sometimes they laugh and kick me. My approach is working. I think they really like me. Signed, Barack Obama, President of the United States. I wish I didn't find that quite so apropos. David in Tennessee noting, Barack Obama could propose existing law as the way to cure our problems. The repigs, out of ignorance and hatred, would rail against it. Not effing kidding. And it's true. This is a sick and twisted play on the Groucho Marx singing, whatever you're for, I'm against it, in the 1930s. And I guess I just don't... I don't see the point, unless it is, you know, this eternal, infernal, endless game of each side trying to make the other look bad. Now, I'm not one of those silly people who think that both parties are completely corrupt and they're just the same. I don't buy into the Ralph Nader 2000 argument that there was no difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. I agree with a great deal of what Ralph Nader says, but that ain't one of them. Never will be. They are both corrupted by money, certainly. One is more corrupt. Far more corrupt. They are not equally ideologically insane. I reject all false equivalences. But reality is that ain't much going to happen between now and January 2013 because from the day he was inaugurated, the Republican Party said,
My fellow Americans, ladies and gentlemen of the fruited plain, I hope he fails.
Jim Demented is boycotting the proceedings tonight. He's from South Carolina, of course, and doesn't want to be in the room with one of those. Where are we going, and why are we in this handbasket? Damn fine question in my book. How do we get out of it? That could probably take us a solid week of shows. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to get us started. So, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back for your phone calls. Not for President, not sure. We'll monitor him in the background, if that's okay. Or you guys can tell me if I need to pot up or whatever. And check out something worthwhile being said. Okay? That just seems the right way to go. Of course, we have the Green News Report coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, one of my favorite segments during any given week. Because the schedule has been so squirrely of late, we haven't played it as often as we should. But we'll have that during this break. A brief mention, we try to get between 6 and 10 people on any given night to contribute $10 apiece to keep the horn going. It was pretty dry last night, and so far, pretty dry tonight. So a gentle reminder, the way that all this happens is by your kind contributions, your donations, your gifts. And the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. As is the snail mail address, either of which, whatever suits you, suits me, suits us. So we will take a break, Green News Report, and then we'll be back with your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
It's Thursday, September 8th, 2011.
Only a few weeks ago, he announced that New Jersey would be withdrawing from the Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
In exclusive leaked audio, billionaire David Koch says of New Jersey's Chris Christie,
"He is my kind of guy."
Wednesday's Republican debate runs the gamut from science.
In order for the Republican Party to win, we can't run from science.
To fiction.
Well, I do agree that the science is not settled on this.
Plus, the planet still not listening to Republicans.
Oh, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
All of that and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our next guest says the main obstacle to this country becoming energy independent is the largely democratic belief that humans are primarily to blame for global warming.
Ah, that explains it. Thank you, Lou Dobbs. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Dez, this just in the wake of this week's Republican debate out here in California, Texas governor, Republican presidential frontrunner, and climate change denier Rick Perry is apparently due a big congratulations as his state, the great state of Texas, is now on the record as having the hottest summer ever in the United States. That's for any state in the union, Dez. So congratulations to Governor Perry, I guess.
Yes, and that's not all for the extreme weather. At least three people are dead, and 120,000 have been evacuated in Pennsylvania and New York due to more historic flooding from the remnants of Tropical Storm Lee. But hey, climate science is a hoax if you listen to the entertaining political theater that was on display at Wednesday's latest Republican presidential debate. But more on Republican climate change denial in a moment. Our top story, Brad ignited a firestorm in New Jersey this week with of exclusive audio tapes secretly recorded at the latest billionaire Koch Brothers strategy seminar in Vail, Colorado in June. The billionaire Koch brothers are the oil and chemical industrialists who fund the climate change denial industry and AstroTurf groups like Americans for Prosperity. The secret tapes reveal that New Jersey's Republican Governor Chris Christie secretly met with billionaire oil man David Koch not long before withdrawing New Jersey from the Northeast's Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a cap-and-trade agreement to cut emissions and invest in clean energy that is a direct threat to the Koch's business. David Koch and the billionaire titans attending the seminar applauded the move.
It would have raised energy costs, reduced economic growth, and led to very little, if any, benefit for the environment.
In fact, PolitiFact discovered that the cost of staying in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, would cost New Jersey families approximately 42 cents per month. So it wouldn't really have cost the voters of New Jersey that much. On the other hand, it might have cost David Koch and his Koch Industries a great deal. And today, AP is following up on our leaked secret tapes from that Koch conference, and they're quoting environmentalists as charging that this tape is the, quote, smoking gun, proving that Chris Christie has been in bed with the Koch brothers all along. Chris Christie's people, while acknowledging that he did secretly meet with David Koch several months ago and at his political strategy meeting in Vail in late June, say that his decision to pull out of the Greenhouse Gas Initiative had nothing to do with his meetings with the Koch brothers.
You can hear the complete tapes and the transcripts at bradblog.com. Looks like you've caused some trouble this week.
I do my best.
Entertaining political theater on display at Wednesday's latest Republican presidential debate. Frontrunner Governor Rick Perry's home state of Texas is still burning in the worst fire season in state history, with over 1,600 homes destroyed in just a few days. But in Wednesday's debate, Perry doubled down on his claim that the science is not settled on climate change and refused to answer when pressed about where he gets that information.
Which scientists have you found most credible on this subject?
Well, I do agree that the science is not settled on this.
Are there specific scientists or specific theories that you found especially compelling as you've educated yourself?
Let me tell you what I find compelling is what we've done in the state of Texas using our ability to regulate our clean air. We cleaned up our air in the state of Texas more than any other state in the nation during the decade.
In other words, Rick Perry hasn't talked to any scientists before coming to his, quote, scientific conclusion about climate change.
And the reason Texas air quality improved is because they were forced to do so by federal law and had the dirtiest air to start with. For his part at the debate, former Utah Governor John Huntsman says he supports science, but pretty much only as a way to win over independent voters in the general election.
In order for the Republican Party to win, we can't run from science.
Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, who flip-flops on the science depending on his audience, fired off a thoroughly false attack on the Obama administration, claiming Obama has halted nuclear development and domestic drilling, one of several completely false claims since federal support for nuclear power and domestic drilling are at their highest levels in over 40 years.
For more on all of these stories, including my exclusive secret Coke tapes, please stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation for the kind of muckraking reporting and truth-telling that we do right here every day on the Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, for pity's sakes. Of all the times it was stupid. Nope, still not working. Nope, not that either. Okay, well, we'll just pretend I ran the hour two, Hosner. Is that okay by you? Yeah, good. Brad mentioned the god-awful flooding going on in the Northeast. I got an email earlier today from our good buddy Dr. John. I love saying that, Dr. John. Subject line, 100-year flood redux. Jesus, Bob, we're having major problems here in upstate New York. We've been hammered by Tropical Storm Lee over the past 2 days. It stalled over the Northeast and dumped rain all over the Northeast Pennsylvania and southern New York, and probably other places too. Here in my little town, the rivers are so far past major flood stage that we need new metrics. In about another 6 inches, the flood walls around downtown Binghamton will be overtopped. This morning, in the search for a sump pump, I saw water over football goal crossbars, over parked car roofs, and I saw a swamp boat pull a family from their flooded house. Walmart is flooded out, as are two grocery stores. There will be thousands of people who lose everything. It really put my little flooded basement problem in perspective. And speaking of perspective, here's some more. 2 months before my wife and I moved up here in 2006, this area suffered a 100-year flood. Billions in damages. Now, 5 years later, we're having another one. Another 100-year flood. Actually, both were in that gray area between a 100-year and a 500-year flood. Some gray area. Twice in half a decade. These poor people who lost their homes are victims of climate change. Who's going to help them? Who's even willing to make that connection? Who's going to do something, goddammit? In answer to the last, it's people like you, Coal River Mountain Watch, the marchers in D.C., and may the principal bless you for that. Of course, you folks are just environmentalists. Right? Signed, John. Yeah, we're just tree huggers. God almighty. Who's going to help? Well, let's see. Pretty good idea who ain't. Ron Paul? Sorry. Rick Perry? Forget it. He's willing to let his own state burn to a cinder. Well, with some praying, of course. Eric Cantor? Mm-mm. John Boehner? Nah. This is how decline, in any culture, this is how decline begins. Thank you. Thank you for the note, John. I have dear friends, and have for years, in Binghamton, and I've been worrying about them. Really worrying. But this is how decline begins. And by the time it begins, by the time it's piled up real good, all sorts of people, but look, there's so much of it, we can't possibly fix it. And then the people who never wanted to fix it in the first place say, see, we told you. It's disturbing. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, my God. Somebody, who is this? Oh, somebody named Shani Moore tweeted, I'm waiting for John Boehner to eat a fly out of the air. that's how it's starting now, and I'm like, that's perfect, okay? Definitely perfect. I just saw him walk down, you know how they walk down the aisle in Congress, you know, all yuck, yuck, yucking with those horrible people, and he just sort of grabbed Boehner's hand like they friends from way back. I'm like, FDR, he is not. But,
Not even Eisenhower.
Yeah, not even, and no Truman. You know, Truman had hella contempt. You know, that's what I like about him.
Yeah, what was that, the do-nothing 99th Congress? Was that what he called it?
Yeah, you know, best friend, you know, great quotes like get a dog and, it was just hard, you know, it's like, damn. But anyway, so I don't know Obama, I don't know if he's going to surprise us. I mean, one unpleasant surprise though is that they're looking for even a deeper, reduction in the payroll tax. And, I mean, it's sad that that is the only stimulus that he thinks he can get away with. Because of the corner he's paying himself in, you know?
Well, I don't know.
I
don't know if we're even going to get that.
Well, I don't know, but, I mean, he's going to have to come up with something that's a stimulus because even businesses are now saying that, you know, the tax cuts are like whatever, I need demand. And the only way to increase aggregate demand is to put money in people's hands, one way or the other. So I don't know what he plans on doing. And if he don't do anything, I'm not too sure what he's going to run on. Mind you, though, remember when I told you that the Republicans, they cannot destroy Social Security? Well, yeah, last night was a good exercise in that whole thing because whatever, if Romney believes it or not, he came out like, oh, no, dude, I'm about to pound your ass. And he did. Because Rick Perry looked like a fucking freak talking about Social Security is a Ponzi scheme.
Cruel lie. Wasn't that another? Cruel lie.
No, but he's full of it because I'm telling you, the Social Security, Medicare, the Republicans, they got to be real careful because ain't nobody going to be voting for no Perry. There's a lot of Republicans on Social Security.
But the question, Sandra, is how much can he get away with? Because he was confronted today with that Ponzi scam. After what he said in front of, you know, God and everybody last night, he said, well, Mitt Romney mischaracterized my position on Social Security.
It was just right out. Come on now. I mean, I'm sure he's going to try to spin it, but I just mean, You know, this was sort of the first look-see of people of this fool outside of his home state of hell, which is what I call Texas right now. I mean, my God, if you're not rich and living in that hellhole.
If you're rich and living in a gated McMansion in Texas, do you have your own fire brigade?
Well, I guess you do because they uncut the thing so bad that
75%, Sandra.
People running around wondering why they can't get, I'm not saying that, you know, he's done, but what I mean is that the more exposure of him, the better for Mitt Romney on some levels, except that fool's a Mormon, so I think that's a problem.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say that the man wears magic underwear, not my phrase, that's what Mormons call it, and believes he's going to get his own planet when he dies, own planet.
Yeah, no, it is, I mean, it's just the array of freaks. And then what was up with home bitch talking about children need work? I'm like, oh my God. I mean, that bridge to the 19th century, she's fucking leading it.
She's insane, but bear in mind, didn't her campaign manager or whatever, Ed Rawlings, didn't he just quit
But yeah, I mean, you know, that's because, I guess apparently all the big money is shifting over to that murderer from Texas, and I'm calling him that because God knows how many people was executed under him. He's, you know,
234.
Yeah, but the thing is, and I know it's been talked about to death already today, but I must say, when them people was clapping, I'm like, are these SEALs? Or is that for real? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, no, I don't think they're SEALs, Sandra. I think they're... No, that is a barometer of the manifest sickness of a significant portion of our country.
Yeah, no, it's sick. It's very disturbing because even if you are for capital punishment, isn't it a bit somber? Hello? Cheering? I don't know. I just...
I think the Republicans would sell tickets as deficit reduction.
Well, then again, we do come from a country that had public executions. That was sort of like entertainment along with... I saw them pictures of the burnt Negroes swinging with crowds below.
Picnicking. They brought baskets.
Right. I mean, I know you know about the whole collection of the lynching postcards. You know, that caused me nightmares and traumas when I saw that. And I'm thinking, wow. And so this country... So I guess we shouldn't be surprised by the cheering, but... You know, it's always really amazing when that kind of ugliness pops up in the sort of sanitized, corporatized setting, isn't it? I was howling. I thought, oopsie, that might be a little bit too much for them people.
And but you don't know.
It was nasty.
It was. It was vile.
It was horrible. I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, come on. With that crowd, if Rick Perry had said... And I have a special gift for y'all tonight. I've prepared a special treat. We were going to have an execution in Texas, but I brought him right here to kill him right in front of you. Everybody clap if you want that to happen.
Well,
kind of like reverse Tinkerbell.
Kept waiting for Ronald Reagan to float on over to, you know, I thought you just turned to a right horror show. You know, right?
Well, and then, you know, then the Reagan stuff.
Oh.
I mean, why not just bring out the corpse and fillet it?
Right.
I mean, that's gross. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well, no,
but
it's
what? Yeah, they were like having zombie sex with him last night.
Like zombie politics. I mean, you know, the zombie metaphor can be applied so much in this culture. It's incredible and it's very disturbing. But the Republicans are like, they straight up party of death all around. Death all around. And anyway, that was a spectacle, but... Yeah, the Ron Paul, that little incident that's interesting.
Well, and I mean, that look on Perry's face, he's got that, he's raised that left finger.
Horrible.
Yeah, I mean, if he'd had a white glove, would he whomp him across the face with it and told him it was pistols at dawn?
Well, or stick that collie that he was posing in front of on him.
Jesus.
You know?
But I mean, there was all kinds of crazy last night. As it was going down, I got a note from Jude. And Jude is a very unflappable woman. Mm-hmm. She is a woman of great passion and great commitment, but she's not prone to just really getting, you know, howling, shirt ripping crazy like I do sometimes. And I just got this note from her last night, Sandra, that said, "Oh my God, Bob, the debates are on. President Obama was just chastised for not being there by Gingrich to listen to the jobs plans." And Jude just said, "Oh my, I think I must have a glass of wine, Bob. Clowns, they have brought in the clowns."
It really is horrifying. That was what I was left with. I'm thinking, oh my God. Oh, so you have.
And so I'm sitting in the doctor's office for 4 hours today, just watching replays. I mean, I appreciate the fact that the office was willing to help with my show prep and stuff.
Mm.
But, you know, I took my little blood pressure pill when I got up this morning, like I do every day. And I was just sitting there, and it was just going... And, you know, you can feel it. They say, you know, blood pressure, the high blood pressure, the silent killer. Bull. When it's going up in me, I know it's going up. Because it feels like what the sphygmomanometer looks like. It's just going up, 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 up. And with every little bit of crazy, I'm sitting there, and you know, there really is. There's cognitive dissonance involved, Sandra, because at the same time you're watching this and like the cheering over the execution and stuff, you can't, it is insufficient, and it's probably one of those phrases that goes on, that needs to go on your list. You can't get your mind around it. That this is a significant, you know, statistically significant portion of America that cheers for executions.
Yeah, well, but it's the same as people cheering about blowing away Obama. I mean, Obama Osama. I was like, oh my God, you know, that was sick too. You know, just kind of the fetish of punishment and killing and bloodlust. You know, that seems to be.
And let's not leave our buddy Herman Cain out either. He cited the Chilean economy as a means by which we could get rid of Medicare.
Yeah, right. I know.
Is this the part of Medicare where we shove people out of the airplanes at 10,000 feet?
That is sort of a tactic of the South American dictators, isn't it? I know in Argentina they was tossing people out of airplanes too. Listen. These people are in La La Land. If they're talking about Chile as the model of a Milton Friedman wonderland, that's what they're thinking. But that ain't what's going on in Chile. You know, Chile has basically gotten rid of so much of that, and if it's not gone, they're trying to damn this in the street all day long, every day, trying to get rid of the rest of it. So, no. Cain, you know, he's out there. He's a dumbass. Another sort of CEO that's as dumb as a.
Well, did you read that piece from Truth Out? Goodbye to All That, the confessions of a former Republican congressional staffer.
No, I didn't. I haven't seen that.
It was over at Truth Out, and I don't recall what original publication it came from. But you know, he made these statements about. What the modern Republican Party is basically claiming that, well, let me see if I can pull the quote up here. I've got it right here. It's by Mike Lofgren. And Mike Lofgren was a congressional staffer it just says on the Republican side of both the House and Senate budget committees. And he writes of the Republican Party, among other things, they worship at the altar of Mars, meaning they're bloodthirsty and warmongering.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes this comparison to John C. Calhoun, and it was just one of those things. If you Google at some point, goodbye to all that. I think you'll be absolutely it's a longish article, but it is well worth it. I'm trying to find this thing here. He makes reference to the Paul Krugman's centrist cop out. I joked long ago. Krugman says that if one party declared the Earth was flat, the headlines would read "Views differ on shape of planet." There's this reference to John C. Calhoun. He says there were. Only 44 million Republican voters in the 2010 midterm elections, but they effectively canceled the political results of the election of President Obama by 69 million voters. And that's kind of dizzying. So, I don't know. I don't know. The closest thing to a normal Republican has got to be John Huntsman, right?
Well, yeah, and, you know, he is like milk toast. I just don't really see. I mean. I really can, I guess, I can see them nominating Perry, except for the specter of Karl Rove. He ain't too pleased with him or the rest of them crazy. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it plays out for the Republicans, because there's some powerful people who aren't that keen on the crazy train, because they probably know that might not get elected, you know, at the end of the day. So... I don't know. I'm not too sure what to make of the whole Perry thing. I mean, I keep looking at him, listening to him, thinking, is this for real? Are we a country that is able to promote something this ridiculous as the president? That's all. I'm at that point. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Because he's insane. And his state is fucked up.
Sideways.
Sorry.
No,
I was planning on using that.
That's okay. But it is.
I mean.
Well, look at what, you know. Well, we've made more advances in cleaning up. This in the Brad blog or in the Green News report there a minute ago. We made more progress cleaning up air pollution in Texas. Bull. That so-called progress was made because the place is filthy.
Yeah, here's the big hint.
It's still filthy. It is still toxic to live in Texas.
Yeah, it's like L.A. in 73 or 68. I mean, come on. Texas sounds like it's a state that is in a really bad way for a huge amount of the people. I mean, isn't one of our Horn family used to teach and got laid off, fired or whatever?
Yeah, the Texas Betsy, yes.
Right, you know, and it's just kind of like, they're just, you know, it's incredible. I think they've axed 100,000 teachers or something really outrageous in that state. And so, he's bragging about his job creation. A bunch of $8 an hour jobs? I mean, that seems like what it is. And I'll never forget the whole comparison of his 30,000 freaked out Christians praying, and right down the road you had 100,000 struggling families, you know, trying to get some pencils. You understand what I'm saying? I think about that, and I'm like, oh, my God, what is really going on?
And see, but that's where I think we run into trouble, Sandra, because, you see, you think that way, I think that way. We think in these juxtapositions. But he doesn't. Those 100,000 people don't exist for him.
Well, and Republicans are making sure that none of them kind of people are going to exist in this election. I mean, the sort of voting stuff that's going on, this is like as blatant. I feel like it's 1958, and I wasn't even alive. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It is retrograde motion.
No. But the voting thing is a real worry. It's like, oh, hey, wait. We know that. What's the communist woman said? If voting worked, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, Emma Goldman.
Emma, yeah. So, but what's really going on is them disappearing all these people from the voting rolls. I mean, Rick Scott instantly 1.2 million people because he reversed Chris's allowing the felons to vote. So just like that, 1 million people won't be able to vote this time around in Florida. These are big numbers.
Yeah. Well, they weren't going to vote the right way anyway, because that's the ultimate measure, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I know.
Because they're not disenfranchising Republicans.
No. They're suppressing the vote amongst different classes of people, just like they did before the civil rights movement. See, it looks to be that bad. And I don't. Once again, I'm not too sure what Obama is expecting at this election. There's a lot of things working against him.
And yet, I don't know, my guess is, and I think it's a soundly made guess, Sandra, my guess is that this is the politics, this is judo, this is rope-a-dope, or at least it's perceived to be, where, you know, they're going to punch themselves out while he sits on the ropes and lets them batter his body, but, you know, then they're so tired that he can land one punch to the jaw and get re-inaugurated on January the 20th, 2013.
Well,
is there any other way to explain it?
Well, I don't know, but if he is the president come that time, I just don't really know what the landscape is going to be looking at. I mean, I sent you that website I had to do, right?
Yeah.
And did you see that photo of the Israeli protest? I mean, that picture was crazy. It looked like lava, and it was a whole bunch of people. And I just think that it has to come here. I don't mean violent. I just mean, I think people are going to have to do something to respond to the complete destruction of the economy. I mean, you can't have these many people not working. I just don't know. I don't understand how they expect for this to go on and on and on.
Here's another did you read. Reverbo sent me a link today to the New York Magazine article basically a retrospective of the decade following September 11th by Frank Rich. Did you happen to?
No, I was going to, though, because I know he's writing for that matter.
It's worth it because, you know, one of the things he says is that while we all thought on September 11th that that would be, you know, our defining moment, it turns out that the defining moment may actually be the wholesale looting of everything that we considered to be America in the years following. This is, I mean, this is, for all that we protested, for all that we knew that it was wrong, this is not going to turn out to be the decade of the Afghanistan War, even though the Afghanistan War has gone almost a decade. This is not going to be the decade of the illegal, unjust, criminal Iraq War. This is going to be the decade of the looting of America.
Yeah, and the complete reduction of the standard of living. I mean, this is what translates. I mean, there are consequences to what's going on here. And what's really disturbing is the lack of accountability in areas where it occurred. I mean, for example, you now have Wells Fargo getting into the payday loan business, but they just call it something else.
Yeah, and by extension, I saw another story just yesterday that food stamp benefits are slowly being allowed to be used
in restaurants.
In restaurants.
No, and they're clamoring for it. And the implications of that is so sick. You know, it's just sort of these corporations, they see that, okay, we're going to have a permanent underclass in America, so we need to position ourselves to get a hold of that money, too. I mean, think about it, Bob. It's so sick. It's so parasitical and cannibalistic, the whole process. I looked at that and I thought, are you kidding me? But that, because all that is a way for them to get that money. That's all.
But yeah, it's a way for them to get that money, but it scares the life out of me because it's hard enough for a person to live on that to begin with. We're talking about less than $3 a day per person.
No, but I mean,
now how are you going to live on $3 a day on the McDonald's or Wendy's dollar menu?
Well, exactly, though. But you see, but this is what's going on, though. Think about that. They have so many people who are using this transfer payment, let's talk in terms of that, which is what food stamps are, that the corporations have to get at it because those people are spending. You see what
well,
I mean?
Yeah, didn't I say a month or so ago for instance, if we went into default and the food stamp payments didn't go out, that there would be phone calls coming from Bentonville, Arkansas, saying, you know, y'all fix this quick?
If it ain't, yeah, that means...
Because while nobody wants to acknowledge it, Sandra, things like unemployment benefits,
yeah,
and the SNAP program, otherwise known as food stamps, are significant legs that are still holding up this otherwise tottering nation. You know, the AIG is not holding up this nation. GE is not providing the infrastructure essential support for this nation. It is people using food stamp benefits.
Right, and the sort of endless transfer payments from the government to the citizens. And people don't want to acknowledge it, but that's what the hell is going on. Aggregate demand, that's it. And we have Obama talking as if the private sector is going to step up and start job creating? What in the hell fantasy world are these people living in?
Well, and I was about to go the same place. That's, you know, that's that kind of, it was Rick Goodner who taught me the phrase magical thinking.
Oof.
I mean, it's a real psychological thing where people who have real problems stop being able to think rationally, and they think in terms instead of, well, here's a good one. Well, I can't pay my power bill, but I'm playing the lottery, and I could win, and then everything will be great. That's magical thinking. And it's magical thinking on a grand governmental scale, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and it's also magical thinking on a citizenry, and this is where I always get to shake my head at just the lack of political efficacy and ignorance. It's just going to be the death of us and this country because I now take you to the destruction of the fucking post office. 600,000 people are employed by that. Wake up, folks.
You know what? Of all the horrors that have been presented in the last year...
No, this is a horror.
That gives me... No. I mean, that's passing the peach pit horror.
It's awful. I had no idea that the... What organization on this planet has to fund their health care for their workers 75 years in advance? Hello?
Well, that was hostage taking. That was terrorism. That was a poison pill, and it was very deliberate.
And the thing is that, once again, we're talking the second largest employer behind Walmart here, the post office. And the post office is self-funding again. It's disgusting. We are tearing down institutions that are perfectly okay. What other...
Well, as Lottie noted in the chat room last night, it was essential to the founding of the very republic itself. It's in the Constitution.
What other service can you think of that costs less than 50 cents? You can mail a damn letter across the country. I mean, let's get real, people. If they destroy the post office, it is open season to privatize every last service that you can possibly think of. And this is serious. Where's our leadership on this? Are they really just going to sit back and let the Postal Service completely fall apart? Because I tell you this, FedEx ain't going to deliver out in bum hell wherever.
I live there, and they will gladly bring me a box for $20.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And this
UPS will gladly bring me a box for $20, $10.
Another leg of the class warfare. Here we go.
But you know what? They're not gonna bring. Really, the federal government is gonna spend $10 per person to send out Social Security checks?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no. The implications are like, where's eBay? Where's Netflix? They better speak the hell up.
There. Oh, that is the truth.
But, you know, it's like, wake the hell up, Amazon. I'm sorry. Let's just be real. It's the post office, people. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get exercised. I'm just sort of like, you have got to be kidding me with this. I was reading up about that thinking, oh, no. You know, but this private business has a big stake in the U.S. Post Office working.
You know, right? If there's anything to be said beyond the essential horror of it, it is that this is part and parcel of a long-standing scheme. I remember, I guess it was maybe 2004, when then-Senator Rick Santorum tried to defund the National Weather Service and tried to use government monies to advance AccuWeather.
Right, I remember.
Because they were headquartered out of State College, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And you know, he was making private business can do this more efficiently than the government. You know, I guess while he was playing with a dead fetus or something. But these free marketeers believe that there's always something better to be done, but it's not true. You know, I was at the doctor's office today, and I was talking to him. You know, we were talking about water issues and people getting poisoned and having organs pulled out at inordinate rates around here. And I said to him, you know, look at our public water system here in our little town. We got a congressional grant to extend public water, Sandra, out from the little town and here to where I live. Until then, we were on this house ran on cisterns and a well. Can't drink the well water now. But what happened is, as soon as they got those water lines built, the public service district, they turned around and sold it to West Virginia American Water Company. They privatized the public water supply. And the rates have done nothing but go up.
Up, 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 up.
The quality has gone down, 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 down. And there's no incentive or no urge to make things any better, because the only goal of West Virginia American Water, who is a wholly owned subsidiary of American Water, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of a British holding company that is a wholly owned subsidiary of the worst, one of the worst polluters in Germany, their only purpose is to serve as stockholders. You know, and I don't know, maybe we're just failing in our messaging, Sandra. There are things in this country that are not suitable, not suitable vehicles for the profit motive.
It's some crazy stuff going on. I mean, the post office thing is a real, it's just a canary. I mean, it's a big canary, but the whole privatization, I mean, I don't think people realize. It's like, the postal service is about as accessible as any institution in this country, bar none. It's serviced,
yeah, because if I want to go to the UPS office, I got to go 70 miles round trip to Beckley. If I want to go to the post office, I can walk there and be back in half an hour.
Right. I mean, it's in communities, all sorts of communities. You know, like you mentioned before, the elderly, low-income folks, all those people rely on the postal service. And so guess what? Now it's under major attack. Why am I not surprised? And guess who's going to be leading the charge? The richest MF-er in Congress, Daryl Issa. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
These rich people, they don't care. It ain't nothing to them. They're quite happy to destroy it because
$20 to mail a letter doesn't mean anything to them.
No, but it's just sort of, I don't know. I was just kind of appalled thinking.
And there are things that are little. And you'd never notice them except for the fact of, you know, what my world is like. Do you know, this will make you scream, you were talking about FedEx won't come out to rural Busted Knuckle or whatever?
Yeah.
Well, they really won't, because if they don't feel like it, FedEx and UPS stop at my local post office and drop off all the boxes for delivery by the Postal Service. Not
right,
kidding.
That's the thing. That's what they do. The post office will extend wherever FedEx won't go because FedEx won't do it because they can't make a profit. And it's like, that should be the clue, people, that some institutions aren't there to make a profit. I don't know. I'm just kind of like, it's exasperating, really is at this point.
Hey, one other thing, Sandra. An article I saw today comes from Op-Ed News. Sometimes there's like some kind of loopy crap there. This doesn't look like that. Headline, Obama team feared coup if he prosecuted war crimes. And apparently...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this. It's a story about some remarks that were made September 2nd by Berkeley Law School Dean Christopher Edley Jr. It was a forum on 9/11. Bolt Hall, which is the law school at Berkeley,
right,
held this forum. And the dean, Christopher Edley Jr., was the moderator. He was also the number 6 guy on the totem pole for the Obama transition team. And I guess a question was put to him, because I remember the discussions about this. A question was put to him, and he was trying to explain President Obama's, we must look forward and not back, because that drove a lot of us crazy, approach to war criminals like, you know, Dick Cheney and so forth. And he described the transition team's fears. And it's not offered as a quote, but the writer says, Edley said that the transition officials, not Obama, agreed that he faced the possibility of a revolt. A coup.
You mean from the security state apparatus?
Right.
Well, but isn't that the song and dance from Kennedy on down? Isn't that what we always hear operating in the background of our country, this sort of shadow government? Hell, I mean, you know, and to think it's just some sort of black person too. Listen, that's always the sort of the line for me with Obama. It's like, yeah, I'm sick of him, but no, I'm not unaware of that reality too. And you know, I don't want the man to get taken out either. You know what I'm saying?
No.
I really don't want to see nothing like that. I don't. So, yeah, I don't know what to believe, but I know enough about the creation of our police state to know that the shit is deep.
You know, and David in Tennessee observing about the 2012 election, and I think this deserves some consideration, Sandra. He says, look, Bob, if the Repigs take the Senate and hold the House, they probably want Barack Obama in office. A, they have a man that rolls over all too easily for them, and B, the ugly right has a media-ready red herring punching bag to blame all the ugly stuff on. It's a win-win for the Repig-licking party.
And it could be the death knell for the New Deal, too, to finish that off if he comes back. I mean, I know it's, you know, I sort of am painting a no-win situation here because I'll be honest with you, Bob, I'm as worried about his second term almost as a Perry presidency. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, you mean when he gets to be the president he really wants to be?
Yeah, I'm concerned. Yeah, it's not boding that well.
Oh, God, by the way, I know it's a little tough because it's cartoons on the air, but we've got another classic from Tom Tomorrow, Sandra.
Okay, then I'm going to have to go and look at that. But listen,
yeah.
I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
All right.
Bye now. Sandra and I have, she's turned me on to some of Tom Tomorrow and the vice versa. And David in Maine just sent this along with the note, read this now. Conservative Jones and the Mystery of Liberal Behavior. This week, another, and of course Conservative Jones, is two little adolescent boys, one of whom is wearing a Sherlock Holmes double-billed hat. It's over at Daily Kos. This week, another mystery from the case files of Conservative Jones, boy detective. Come in, Moonbat. You're just in time. I am attempting to solve the enigma of recent liberal behavior. Oh, this should be good. For instance, when Eric Cantor quite reasonably suggests that disaster relief should be contingent upon budget cuts, why do liberals object? Moonbat. Because it is heartless and tone-deaf? Oh, Moonbat, how I envy your blissful detachment from reality. But to continue, the mystery is compounded by the left's response to Ron Paul, who simply pointed out that they didn't need FEMA during the great hurricane of 1900. You mean when thousands died and men were conscripted to burn the corpses piled up rotting on the beaches of Galveston? Moonbat, your flair for the dramatic is matched only by the slavishness of your devotion to government spending, which brings us to our final data point. The inexplicable liberal resistance to simply defunding the National Weather Service. After all, why should taxpayers be forced to foot the bill for a service which private sector companies such as AccuWeather can provide? Oh my God, not AccuWeather! But those companies use National Weather Service data. Quiet, Moonbat. Through a rigorous process of deduction, I have arrived at the solution. And it is that liberals are just irrational. By God, I've done it again. I'll alert the media. Next, why are liberals so obsessed with global warming? They ignore experts such as Rush Limbaugh. It makes no sense. Sweet Jesus. By the way, before we run back to the phones, well, they're clapping for him now, so no need to go there. But, I kind of wish we could tune in because the C-SPAN red line, blue line. Oh, this is fun. Tonight, for President Obama's speech, it's not Democrats, Republicans, Independents. The three lines to call are Democrats, Republicans, Unemployed. I didn't know they were a political party now. Where's my 8x10 certificate, the membership certificate suitable for framing? Democrats, Republicans, Unemployed. Oh, they're all clapping in unison as if they've all got little things wired into the backs of their necks like some sort of futuristic dystopian, right. President not sure, walking out of the room, shaking hands all around. Gosh, it's just a lovely time. Anybody know what he said? My first right wing blast of hate is already out. It was ready to go before he ever spoke. Obama's speech, nothing more than empty promises, says AJS president. Pro-business group responds to Obama address. They were responding even before it was done. Dateline, Alexandria, Virginia. Stephen DeMora, president for Americans for Job Security, today issued the following statement in response to Obama's so-called job speech. Tonight's speech by President Obama, which hasn't been done yet, those are my parentheses, was nothing more than empty promises and a call to maintain the status quo. If President Obama truly wanted to help America's job creators, he would eliminate burdensome regulations and expensive red tape. Interestingly enough, while I was sitting in the doctor's office, none other than my very own senator, Blanche Manchin, showed up on Fox News to make that very point. That the way we turn the economy around is to end regulatory oppression. That's coal newspeak for let's get back to absolutely blowing up everything that ain't moving. From the FCC to the EPA to the NLRB, the executive branch must make it easier to do business in America, and that is something that tonight's rhetoric-filled speech failed to advocate. Oh, for pity's sakes. Dave in Tennessee noting, all the other first-world nations with regard to the Postal Service, all the other first-world nations' postal services have faced the same pressures that face ours. Their solution? The other postal services were allowed, encouraged, to go into insurance and rudimentary banking services. Congress has gone ballistic over and over that the USPS be given an unfair advantage over the private sector. Rejection upon rejection. Look, says David, the only reason other nations did that was to make safe a vital service viable and then let it have an income stream. Lottie, our chat room moderator, had a great idea last night. He sent a note off to Bernie Sanders, being one of the few actually decent and effective members of the United States Senate, suggesting that the Internet be nationalized and that the United States Postal Service be put in charge of it. It's a great idea. Everybody else, everybody in the country would have a USPS.com email address. Let's keep things going. It's about 9 minutes before the hour, and we proceed. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, Bob.
Yes.
Andy.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Fine. How about yourself?
I've been better.
Yeah, I heard you're been under the weather.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to have to. Apparently I'm going to have to take a diuretic. I got a bunch of fluid in my thoracic cavity or something. It's kind of icky.
That's a bummer. I heard you talking about a little bit of the Republican debate. I certainly found that part where they clapped the 234 deaths under Rick Perry's watch pretty incredible. You know, it seems like, man, I was just wondering, where am I? Is this 1930s Nazi Germany or what? For them to clap like that? And my understanding is 41 prisoners in Texas under his watch have been exonerated that were supposedly given the death sentence because of DNA. 41?
Yeah, and I think 38 of them were compulsorily done so. Because of the Supreme Court ruling about executing juveniles in 2005.
And he has absolutely no remorse.
None.
Whatsoever. I don't think he's got a brain at all. I don't think he's got the ability of any kind of intellectual thought process. The guy is just like a male gold digger. That's all he is. He's just out for the power and out for the money, and nothing else matter And his freaking state is burning down, right? The place is on fire. And what has he done? He's cut.
Well, even before the fire started, Andy, it wasn't exactly the miracle it's being touted as.
Oh, you'll have to tell me that. I love the question he got last night, too, about the, why do you have 25% of the people here are uninsured? And you got, Massachusetts where everybody is insured because that's the Romney program that they have, which isn't a great program, but at least people have insurance. But, you know, in Texas, 25% are uninsured. And his answer, he puts it back, oh, it's the government's fault. It's too much regulation. No, you SOB. It's your goddamn fault because the states regulate their own health care. Baloney, boy. The federal government has nothing to do with that. You regulate it. You have created that complete mess in that state. And there are 34 states that have the ability to actually tell the insurance companies to lower their rates or get out of the state, period. Either lower those rates or you get out of here. And I doubt Texas is one of those, but...
No.
We just had a bill in California called AB 52. They tried to pass this bill four times. There's an insurance commissioner that's been pushing. His name is Dave Jones. The bill would allow him to lower the premiums from health insurance, lower the copays, and also lower the deductibles. Lower the deductibles, I guess, is what you want. But that would give him that capability, because now he has the ability to actually go into their books. They passed a bill in January that allows him to actually look into the books and get the state insurance statutory information that they get. So we can really delve into the financials and find out what the overheads and the administrative costs are of an insurance company. So now he would actually be able to tell them what rates they should actually be charging. And for the fourth time, the damn bill failed. They got it through the assembly in the legislature, passed by quite a bit. I think it was 46 to 23, some kind of large amount. And the Democrats in the Senate needed 21 out of 25 state senators to pass it, and they couldn't get it. They couldn't get 21 senators.
Jesus.
And, you know, we have it where these son of a bees, Anthem Blue Cross, was upping, they're upping 40% annually on people, on some of these premium rates. You know, they're just, it's just totally out of hand. And over the past 10 years in this state, the inflation on insurance premiums has been 130% when general inflation has been 29%. I mean, there's no question these insurance premiums are totally out of control. The whole insurance industry, health insurance industry, of course, is totally out of control. But couldn't get it through the Democrats. Democrats couldn't pass it.
That's stunning.
All lined up.
Well, and there's a lot of Democrats that are simply the bedwetting terrified, right?
Right. And I could only find one Democrat on record that said he wouldn't pass it. The guy's name is Ed Hernandez from Baldwin Park. He was on record as saying he wouldn't support the bill. But I called up the actual senator who was sponsoring the bill. His name is Mike Feuer, a senator from Los Angeles. And they wouldn't tell me who were the five that they couldn't get, you know, to come on board. It pisses me off because I'm losing my insurance at the end of the month.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not even actually trying to pick it up because I have a pre-existing condition. I don't think I can anyway, but it would be nice to know that maybe the insurance commissioner has some control over the prices, right?
No, you'd like to hope, sure.
Yeah, no, but we couldn't get that through. Couldn't do it.
Amazing.
Have you been following this, and another subject. Have you been following this AT&T T-Mobile?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
For it all?
Yeah.
You know what really pisses me off, and maybe this is something more for Rick Smith on his line, but it really bugs me. Do you see the CWA, the communication workers, guys going to bat for AT&T over this merger?
Yeah, probably because they've been told that they'll lose their job if they don't.
You know the definition why you have a merger? You have a merger so you create synergies between two companies. If you cannot create synergies, or economies of scale, you don't merge. That means if you have two computer systems, you get rid of all the people from one computer system, and you only keep the people from the other computer system, you completely integrate. So when you integrate and create these synergies, you have to cut jobs. If you're not going to be cutting jobs, you don't have a merger. Period. There's no doubt they'll be cutting tens of thousands.
Right, and that's what I mean, Andy. The word has probably gone out to the CWA at AT&T. Listen, this thing doesn't go through, or if this thing goes through, your jobs are secure, and, you know, those other guys, we'll screw them. But if this thing doesn't, well, you know, one of you is going to, you know, some of you are just going to have to go.
There's no, it's so disingenuous for these guys. The guy I keep hearing is this guy Larry Cohen, the president of the CWA, saying that this merger will be a positive for workers at AT&T.
Well, it's not going to be a positive for people who use cell phones.
Well, that's right. What's going to happen is you're taking the number two wireless vendor in the market and merging with the number four, and now they're going to be number one, and that means that I think the market share numbers, well, now they'll have about, depending on how you slice and dice it, but they'll be having about 45% market share by revenue. I think it's like 39% by subscribers after the merger. And with Verizon and them together, you're talking 80% of the wireless market by two vendors. AT&T and Verizon will have 80% of the wireless market.
Right.
You think there's going to be any competition? You're going to have any choice?
No.
In a market like that? Forget it.
That's
a monopoly. This is a monopoly. I mean, that's not the definition of monopoly.
Well, and, you know, because of the way things work out, we have AT&T cell phones, and we have a Sprint phone. And without fail, that Sprint phone is a much, much better product. Among other things, the data on it is unlimited. And it's 4G in 4G areas. So that, and what happens is when I go to D.C. or somewhere that there's 4G, I use the Sprint phone and set it up as a wireless hotspot, and then use the AT&T iPhone as the video camera to shoot with. Because AT&T, you know, with video, you can get to 2 gigabytes in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But Sprint says, unlimited data. Well, you know, ultimately what this merger would be, you know, that 80% you were talking about there, the other 20% is mostly Sprint. And the whole goal here is to squeeze them out of the market, because it's embarrassing for Verizon and AT&T to have Sprint over here offering unlimited bandwidth, 500 minutes, and unlimited mobile-to-mobile, and unlimited texting for $80 a month.
Right.
You know, it is the very heart and soul of an anti-competitive practice. This is straight out of the Sherman Act.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it took the Obama administration eons to come around to realize, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Oh, by the way, you may be interested to see to hear this, Andy. I just saw a tweet by John Fugelsang.
Sure.
It turns out that the Obama jobs program is 60%. Oh, this is just precious. 60% tax cuts.
That's what I thought you were going to say. Do absolutely
40% spending.
And did they say the amount?
Yeah.
$400 billion or $300 billion?
I haven't gotten there yet, but you know, my gut just kind of, which is in no great shape to begin with, just kind of went, "Aw, damn, really?" Because I know it makes me sound like a Pollyanna, but I keep hoping that somebody in that administration is going to figure it out one of these days.
Unfortunately, no, Bob. And I listened to one of your callers the other day who was indicating Obama deserves a second term. Obama deserves a second term. No. We don't need another Bill Clinton to further destroy the middle class. Sorry.
But what's...
And don't give me this, don't give me this that the Republicans win, because it's not our fault that we're not voting. And a lot of people like me. It's not our fault. It's their fault. Don't blame us. They can blame themselves. They brought this country down. Obama and his gang of people like Rahm Emanuel, he destroyed this country. They did. Don't blame us. Okay?
Well, I mean, that's why I'm not voting for him in the primary. I'm hoping something will get through to him.
There is no question I won't be voting for him in the primary. That's a done deal right there.
But, and I'm not, you know, I'm not offering blame anywhere, Andy, but if it's bad now...
Oh, you should be offering blame. The blame goes on Obama.
No. Within the context of what you were talking about, I'm not offering blame.
And Rahm Emanuel should be number one where the country should be putting the blame. Because he is the orchestrator of the fascist policies that have come out of that administration. And anybody who calls me effing stupid, I want to get in his face. I'll call him effing stupid. He can take that stupid and we'll shove it right down his throat. Son of a bee. I'm offended by that son of a bee.
Oh, by the way, the $400 billion in tax cuts.
Right.
Extended unemployment benefits, and what CNN describes as other measures intended to boost job creation and economic growth.
Job cuts will do nothing.
Well, look, I mean, I am famously not a numbers guy, but if we just eliminate all taxes, is it the Republican position that eliminating all taxes will make the economy boom?
They want it all. That seems to be... Well, and I think it's totally the opposite. It's totally opposite. You increase taxes, I think we more efficiently use the tax dollars that would be wasted on either investments overseas or luxury items that the rich would have or the corporations would just sit on it or invest it overseas. Instead, the money goes to our federal tax coffers. It gets invested. We improve our infrastructure. We build a rail system. We build bridges. We build roads. We do whatever it takes to improve our infrastructure, and the money is much better used and much better for the middle class. I mean, there's no question in my mind. And instead of giving the money in high salaries to CEOs and other executives, the money gets rolled back into capital investments in the company. That's what higher taxes will do. It'll make them keep the money inside the companies and reinvest in capital. Higher taxes will promote a growing economy, a faster growing GDP. You just have to look at the 50s and see that's what happened. The 50s and 60s, where the GDP numbers just skyrocketed. Because the government, in my mind, the Republicans will never agree with this, can more efficiently distribute money that is better off for the common good of the middle class than any rich people can, than Bill Gates can by giving to charity or creating charter schools. The government will do a better job of distribution of funds. Private sector won't. They won't.
No, the private sector will hoard. It's what the private sector does, right?
Right, or they'll build luxury, buy luxury goods, or they'll send the money overseas and invest it overseas. Which is what GE does. That's their biggest thing. Create jobs overseas. They're creating their jobs overseas. They're not creating jobs here. Does it smell good?
No, really, I am a Pollyanna. I was hoping there was going to be some real high-flying ideas. But even this little bit of pissant nothing, these $400 billion in tax cuts, compare whatever that's 60%, whatever 40% of four would be, the Repiglickens have already said, no, hell no, we ain't going to do that. We ain't going to do that at all. I don't know what he's thinking. With the turtlebagger Mitch McConnell, saying Albert Einstein famously said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again expecting a different result. Well, the first stimulus didn't work. What's he think a second one's going to do? It's the post office thing, there. Andy, that Sandra was talking about. That we are in a real, real mess. Now I think America is far more deluded than I am. And seems to think everything's okay. But it isn't. And just like if the Postal Service goes down, we don't know what a world of shit we're in.
Right.
Well, and this
poison pill.
This gridlock.
The post office.
You know, I think David in Tennessee has a very valid point. If the Republicans can maintain the House and retake the Senate, and it ain't as hard as it sounds, then Barack Obama in the White House is fine by them. Because the United States continues to spiral in toward collapse. That's what we have to start talking about, Andy. And I'm not talking about economic collapse or the what did they call Jimmy Carter? Malaise. I'm talking about structural collapse. I'm talking about bridges falling down, roads turning into gravel, people beginning to starve to death. Because that is what the Republican Party wants. And I am scared witless at the prospect of this. Now, the other part of that prospect is, okay, it's not Barack Obama, it's Rick Perry. Or more likely, I think, by the time he burns himself out, yeah, Rick Perry's kind of a bottle rocket, really. Mitt Romney, as weird and Mormon as he is, President Romney. You know what? Social Security is no safer under Mitt Romney than it is under Rick Perry. Than it may be under second-term Obama.
To hear him make that comment about corporations being people, there should be no question where this guy is coming from. He's a complete corporatist. And his stripes that he earned at Bain Capital, where their sole purpose was to go in and buy up companies that were doing fairly well, but might have had probably cash cow businesses, and then to just break the unions at those companies, cut the companies down to nothing, and resell them, just break them up, get rid of the unions. That's what he's all about. That's it. He's for...
So what?
Big profits, and that's what he does.
So I guess the ultimate question then, for the booby prize, I guess, is do we just pour some brown liquor over some ice cubes in a rocks glass and sit back and watch crap collapse?
No social safety net for these guys, that's for sure. You're not going to get anything like that. I don't know what to tell you, Bob. I know this weekend I'm going and I'm working for a congressional candidate we have here that's a real progressive, and working an open house, helping out a woman that's doing the open house. I mean, these are the things I can do. I've been working with another group in San Francisco, Progressive Democrats of America. We're going to have a September 22nd meeting where we discuss getting a primary candidate for Barack Obama, or getting a favorite son in this state that all the progressives are going to vote for to try to send this...
Any idea who that favorite son would be? I'm just curious, because I've seen the favorite son argument put forward, I think it was Matt Stoller who mentioned, favorite son running Tom Harkin in Iowa.
Right. But those are this is just ideas that are being thrown around. I mean, definitely the progressive caucus of the state party has already come out and said, for a number of reasons why we want to do this, which I'm not going to repeat, but they do want to discuss, you know, where we're going to put our recommendation behind as a progressive Democrat. And those are some of the ideas being thrown around. I don't know who the candidate or who would be willing to do that, who would come forward, but they might just be chosen by the progressives and not want that mantle. Who knows? Because nobody wants to take on the establishment of the Democratic Party, who's in the status quo system. At least I don't know of anybody. But we'll find out.
I'm just, and I don't mean to seem like a bummer, Andy. But I mean, the Obama apologists, for whom he can do no wrong, are going to be out there working hot and heavy toward his reelection, you know, with the, you know, with the, oh Jesus, you know, not Rick Perry, oh Jesus, not Mitt Romney, oh Jesus, not Michelle Bachmann, for obvious reasons, and I want to be very clear about that, for obvious reasons, because any of those, any of the Republican candidates running are absolutely toxic to the idea of the Republic. But...
Absolutely, but that's not my problem. That's not my fault. I'm in a corrupt system, and having to participate in this corrupt system, I just elect not to participate. And that's the way I feel about it. I didn't create this corrupt system. Certainly, I wish we had a parliamentary system, a more European system, where my vote actually counted. But as far as I'm concerned, in the way our system works now, my vote doesn't count. So, no matter what people say, and what people say about the Supreme Court seems to be the biggest reasoning, I'm sorry, I'm in the Malloy camp. F that. We're already effed. The Supreme Court is already gone.
Well, that's the question. That's the question I'm asking. Are we so far screwed that at this point everything is effectively deck chair rearranging on the Titanic? Are we at a point of dysfunction, Andy? And this is not a rhetorical question. Are we at a point of dysfunction that is so profound that no action taken can be deemed sufficiently corrective?
With electronic voting machines and the way our two-party system operates, in the short term, it certainly seems that way. It almost seems like anything we do in the short term, we're not going to get results that we want. We're just too far gone. And with Citizens United thrown in there, too, that just makes it 10 times harder also.
Well, and of course you do. You understand as well as I do that the only effective means of overturning Citizens United, a constitutional amendment ain't going to happen. Congressional action ain't going to happen. The only rational means of overturning Citizens United is the Supreme Court. That's all. That's the only hope.
It'd be nice to get legislation too, but that legislation can eventually be canned.
But that legislation, no, that's, I already listed that as an impossibility.
Right now, yeah. Not with the way the proportions are in the House and the Senate, and then with the filibuster rule, like I said, with this whole filibuster thing, with them filibustering everything, it's dysfunctional. The Senate does not work. It does not function. The U.S. Senate does not work for our country, doesn't work for the middle class at all. But I want to
be fair in this discussion, Andy.
The Senate does not work.
Why does the Senate not work?
Because of the filibuster.
No, not because of the filibuster. The filibuster has been in place for literally centuries.
But it's never been used at the frequency.
It is the abuse of the filibuster.
And we have too many cowards, the elite of the Democratic Party, the aristocrats, that are as cowardly, as craven as they come, that won't fight for nothing because they're already rich. They've already made it in this country.
But let's work through this.
The only ones, the middle class, Bob, are the only ones that can cause an uprising in this country. It's only going to come from the middle class, from people like you and me, from the lower class, the middle class. We're the people that are going to cause the revolution here. They're the people.
I want to work through this in a somewhat orderly fashion, Andy. I want to go back to this. Okay, it's the abuse of the filibuster. Who historically, for the last 10 years, the last 20 years, who historically has abused the filibuster?
You know more than me. Of course, it's Mitch McConnell and his gang.
It's the Republican Party. I mean, I don't think anybody can ever remotely suggest that Harry Reid who was the guy from South Dakota? He's an insurance company lobbyist now.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
Daschle. They were both tepid and milquetoast. I don't think anybody can suggest that they abused the filibuster when they were in the minority, mainly because factually they didn't. So, while I understand, there is far too much corporate influence inside the Democratic Party, I agree. But I will, but I must, because I live in a reality-based world, I must deal with a reality-based scenario that, you know, the Senate is dysfunctional not because of what, because it's the Senate. It's not dysfunctional per se. It is dysfunctional because it has deliberately been made dysfunctional. It's what I said earlier, that line that I sent to that guy on Twitter, that all democratic institutions are predicated on the good faith of the people participating in them. When the good faith goes, so does the system. And what we have now is a government in which one party, either majority or minority, witness the House and the Senate, by operating in bad faith, are destroying the system.
But the other
and I can't and I can't crazy. Say I can't I cannot and will not engage in the a pox on both your houses approach for problems that are created by one and not the other.
Oh yes, we can put a pox on both, and I am going to put a pox. The craven, cowardly Democrats could have taken that filibuster away. They could have taken that club away from the Republicans, and they did not do it. They did not do it.
But that's what I was getting at. Is it the I'm not being argumentative to be argumentative. Is it the fault?
Taken that club away from the Republicans.
Is it the fault of the fact that there is a filibuster, or is it the fault of the people who are using it in bad faith? Because it seems very good when we're in the majority to say, well, we'll just take that damn filibuster away is what we'll do. But there comes a time, I mean, that thing is not in there. It's not a toy. It is a very serious procedural tool. And it has been severely abused. And there are those who call for its end, and I have been one of them. But I believe that we have to engage in some serious discussion and some serious consideration. You know, I mean, it's like it's like going out and destroying. I'm trying to come up with a really, really good analogy. It's like going out and destroying an automobile because a drunk drives it into a group, into a school bus. It's not the automobile's fault. It's the drunk's. And the Republicans, in this scenario, are the drunks.
But I have no control over the drunks. I suppose that we do have control over the non-drunken party, because I am in that party. And supposedly I do have some control over them. And they are not doing what my wishes are, to get rid of the club that the other party has. And they refuse to do it.
And ultimately, Andy, that leads to... That leads to the ultimate question.
Over the other side.
That leads to the ultimate question. Is this a burn, baby, burn situation? Is this one of those situations where we let the Democratic Party completely destroy itself down to ashes, give the Republicans their head, let them destroy the nation as we understand it, and then say, okay, we're gonna now rebuild a party?
I guess you're talking about the Malloy camp, and yes.
No, I'm not talking about anybody. I'm talking about the philosophical approach to how one deals with this. I mean,
when you have somebody in office that is as cowardly and craven, again, I'll use those words, as Barack Obama is, he's just a suit. That's all he is. He gives a good speech. That's all. He has no action. He does nothing for us. Oh my, people make excuses. But ultimately, I believe he's got to go. We have to crush him. Get him out of the party. Get the Rahm Emanuels out of the party. Get rid of them. The only way you get rid of them is if they lose, and they have to lose big. Then we can come back once we've cleaned up the house. Yes, that is what I believe. And that is the way many of the Republicans think as well. I forget the name of one Republican operative, but that is a thought process they have too. When you have bad Republicans, they have to lose. They have to be drummed out of the party, and then you start over again.
Right, that's how we got all these teabaggers.
That's the only way to do it.
They drummed out anybody who was not ideologically pure enough to meet, you know, the teabagger creed.
Right.
And that's why we've got the problems we have in the Senate.
But there is no question the mainstream of the Democratic Party, the DLCers, the Clintonistas, do not want progressives in the party. They want us smothered and shoved out.
Well, for instance...
We have to start thinking, this is not... You know, this is not a kid's game. politics.
No, it's not. But it's but it's also not surgery. It's also
that we stick it to them.
It's not. It's also not surgery to be performed with a chainsaw. Let me give you an example.
I think maybe it is.
Just an example by my way of thinking.
Bob, I think I've had enough. It upsets me to even talk. I really, why don't you go on to another caller? I've taken a lot of your
time. All right. Take care, Andy.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
If you do surgery with a chainsaw, all you wind up with is a mess. Let me offer you a case in point. Because I'm into, no, I am into the details of this. But I am a realist before I am anything else. In 2012, Ben Nelson of Nebraska is up for re-election. You know, he's the guy that looks like he's got, his hair is almost as rodent on top of the head-like as Donald Trump's. Ben Nelson is up for re-election. Ben Nelson was part of that perceived Democratic 60-vote majority in the House. But because Ben Nelson was part of it, we never had a 60-vote majority in the House. Ben Nelson is effectively useless as anything that you and I would recognize as a Democrat. Now, does that mean that other Democrats that might be worthy of respect need to go too? That everything just needs to be burnt down and good senators like Bernie Sanders, who is an independent, of course, but an arguably decent senator like Al Franken, Barbara Boxer, who today or in the last day or so gave her blessing to the organ of the Big Greens to reinstate all of their air quality suits in response to the Obama administration's craven. There's that word Andy was using, and I think it's the right one. The Obama administration's craven. Retreat on those EPA air quality rules. Barbara Boxer said, "I hope that every lawsuit they filed, I hope they reinstate. I respect that." Does she need to be relegated to be a backbencher? No. No. At least I don't think so. On the other hand, look at Nebraska. Now, we talked about this story a couple of weeks ago. Ben Nelson's opponent in November for Senate from Nebraska is the current Attorney General of Nebraska. He referred to welfare recipients as coons. Let that go icily all the way through your system. Coons. Now, the primary hasn't happened in Nebraska yet. Is there even going to be a primary candidate to challenge Ben Nelson, who will stand up and publicly criticize him for holding back working people with the Employee Free Choice Act? If there isn't, then don't complain in November when it's Ben Nelson versus the guy who thinks poor people are coons. We have some responsibility in all of this. It's fact. And I understand the impulse, and you may get frustrated with me. I understand the impulse toward burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn is what the Republicans went through with the teabaggers. It ain't working out real well for them. I don't have time to build a third party. I don't. I'm disgusted with the Democratic Party. I'm disgusted with its leadership. I spend a lot of time being disgusted with Barack Obama. But I do take a different tack with regard to the Supreme Court, because a president can screw up the country for a couple of decades. The Supreme Court can screw up America for centuries. We are still shaking off the after effects of the Dred Scott decision and the war that it spawned or helped to spawn. We are still shaking off the after effects of Plessy versus Ferguson, the after effects of the slaughterhouse cases. On and on and on. We are still desperately trying to hang on to the essential freedoms that were guaranteed in Griswold versus Connecticut. But if you want to go burn, baby, burn, fine. I understand. But understand this in return. If you go the burn, baby, burn route, you will never, in your lifetime, see even a modification of Citizens United. You will see it strengthened. You will see it. You will see ramparts built around it. And you will never, ever see a progressive majority in this country. Ever. At all. I feel absolutely certain in that. The smart money. It's not too late. Filing deadlines generally won't roll around until, what, November, January? Depending on when the primaries are. Everybody wants to primary Obama. How about finding a primary opponent for Ben Nelson? Yeah. You don't do surgery with a chainsaw, because that's not surgery, that's mayhem. Kevin writing in from Shanghai. Dear Bob, the playing field has changed. The thing is that the whole playing field truly has changed. Again, and I cannot say this enough times, the only regular paycheck President Obama ever made while he was a community organizer in Chicago was from the University of Chicago and its Ayn Rand disciples. Jobs are being made here in China left and right, and even here in China labor issues are starting to arise. Labor cost in China is rising by the day. The thing is, China uses its 1.4 billion population as leverage. In short, if you want access to our 1.4 billion plus marketplace, you're going to have to give our people some jobs with living wages according to Chinese standards. And we don't have anyone, or hardly anyone, willing to make the same assertions about American workers and American standards. And that is well past distressing. I may be wrong, you see. It may be that this whole thing has to come down around our ears, and we are the ones who get to wear it. That may be our position in history. That may be what comes. But Jesus, I don't know. I'll stay in the struggle as long as I can and to the best of my abilities. But just as when people were arguing against the bailout of the automobile companies, and I kept saying, fine, that's what you want, but how do you explain it to a family of four who have a job and won't. That we're going to do this for some reason of ideological purity? You can't boil a pot of ideological purity and have it either breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I understand that. I even understand it in the context of the things that I argue in favor of. I don't like them, but I understand why a mountain remover household says, well, God, we got to blow up that there mountain some more and poison some more people so we can keep food on our family. Hell, I got a paycheck, and I got the old lady some new bubs for her tanning bed, and Junior's got himself a new four-wheeler and ain't got himself killed yet. Blowing up mountains is about all I know. And to hell with y'all and your cancers. I'm eating. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. And that is the desperate place that we have been driven to. Jobs above all things. Because there is no social safety net of any real meaning. Because one party, not yet openly both, one party is actively on the warpath against Social Security, against Medicare. Now, do we have some mugwumps on the Democratic side? Well, you know, I'd like that. We could certainly discuss that. I don't know what it takes to teach them. But they'll learn. They'll learn. I'm sitting out the primary for Obama. I encourage everyone to. Because trust me, there are people who look at those metrics. They don't just go, hot damn, we won. But somewhere along the way, you have to reach that, and it's an unpleasant analysis to go through. Is this country so far gone, so far past help, that the only thing to help it is to watch it fall apart? And I don't mean Great Depression fall apart. I mean really fall apart. You know, Chinese atonal music, blood in the streets fall apart. Because sunshine, that's a ride you don't want to go on. It just ain't. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tracy.
Yeah, so I've been listening to the show this afternoon, and, well, I first of all, I'd like to ask you, did you see or hear about Joe Scarborough on The View singing?
Oh, God, I saw that thing, and I didn't even have the guts to play the music.
Because, see, I had no choice because, you know, see, it has been so horribly slow. I had to, like, scrape together the $13 to get my nails done because I was just going to try not to hold out on it. But doing, that's something, sometimes you have to do something for yourself, right?
Yeah.
And so I went and got my nails done. So I'm in the nail shop and I could barely hear it. So they keep it down pretty low. And then this old white lady came in and turned up the volume and I saw the thing go across. Joe Scarborough sings. And I'm like, I'm like, Joe Scarborough, wait a minute. I've heard of a Joe Scarborough, but he's on that show with the Daily Joe or whatever. So, and then I'm like, wait a minute, that's him. He's singing. Why? It was awful.
Was it as bad as when Crisco John Ashcroft sang about how the eagle was sore?
About that, and it's right up there with that. And did you hear Herman Cain's gospel song or whatever?
I heard about it. See, I've gotten to the point where I just constitutionally can't tolerate it anymore.
So, I'm like, oh my God. He is actually, and I'm watching The View, and I'm watching Whoopi. Like I said, I could barely hear it, but it sounded like they were praising him. They're like, well, I knew you were a performer, and I figured you could sing, too. And I'm like, not that I'm some great music aficionado or anything like that, but hell, it was awful. I felt like I was being held hostage. It was a god awful thing. So you should have listened to it just so you could get a chuckle, because you would have gotten a chuckle had you turned it up to listen to it. And you know, God, heaven help those who actually did listen to it, because it was just like, really, seriously. So that was that. And so you know, as I'm listening to the show and we're talking, you guys, everybody's been talking about, you know, how this country's going to hell in a handbasket. And you know, fortunately, I live in California. You know, and we pretty, you know, we do something pretty damn good with our infrastructure. We're constantly improving our roads and stuff like that. But I just think about, like you said, all these other states and cities where they have these crazy people running things. And all thing I can think of is all these bridges that are about to come down. Because these bridges were built when? During the WPA, right? During the New Deal, yes?
Many of them, yes, absolutely.
And as a testament, see, the fact that they have lasted this long is a testament to what this country, how great this country used to be. Okay? But the problem is, we're talking 70 years old in some cases, and it's like, these things are not going to be able to last too much longer. And we have to fix them. And so, did I hear you, somebody mentioned that our new, the new jobs bill is how many, what, 60% tax cuts?
Yeah, it's 60% tax cuts, 40% the monetary.
Was there any mention of infrastructure?
That I don't know. I haven't read the breakdown.
Oh, that's right. But okay, so my question is, like one of the other callers brought up, during the 50s and the 60s, when our tax rates were much higher than you know than they are now.
That's how we built the interstates.
That's how we built the interstates. Companies still made money, didn't they?
Oh yes.
They had a vested interest in rebuilding and putting money back into the companies so they could, you know, I don't know, hire people and do, you know, these great things for research and development and stuff like that, because they spent the money instead of, like you said earlier, hoarding it. You know, I'm listening to the show while I was at the grocery store. I just came back from the grocery store, which was a horrifying experience. And it was not because it was crowded by any means or anything like that, because I was making a conscious decision that I need to stop eating out so much as I love torturing you with where I go out to eat.
Yeah, I'm still not over that dim sum.
Yeah, that was so good. it was the most awesome thing ever. But I said, okay, you know what? As much as I spend on going out to eat, I could spend that same amount of money and go to the grocery store and not even really cook, but just like buy Stouffer's and stuff like that. Oh my God, I have two bags of groceries. It was $40. Cause I have to say, I haven't been in the grocery store in a while other than to like buy, you know, milk or what have you. And I don't even buy it that often. But I was just looking at the prices and I'm thinking to myself, I'm counting pennies, Bob. You know, because I'm like, I had certain things, and I was looking at how much this, because the ladies in front of me, when this cashier said $75, and I'm like, they had slightly more than I did, and maybe because they just bought more expensive things, but I kind of freaked out and started putting stuff back. And I should not have to do that. I should be able, you know, I work, and I work damn hard. But, you know, I should be able to go to the grocery store and not have to worry about taking out a second mortgage on a home that I'll never be able to buy because I can't buy a house. Because, I will never be able to afford a home in the current climate, because there's just no way. And I just, you know, like you would say, I'm like you, Bob. I'm trying to still be my Pollyanna self, because I keep thinking it's going to turn around. And I don't want to be that negative person that, you know, can never see, you know, it's over, we're done, and like you said, just get the Jack and some Coke and some ice and just deal with it. Oh, well, actually, if you're getting the Jack and the Coke and the ice, you're not dealing with it, are you?
Well, no, and sometimes that's rational behavior, Tracy.
as I try a new beer today.
Yeah, what? Sam Adams Pumpkin Spice? That sounds interesting.
No, actually, actually, no, I did not get the Sam Adams pumpkin spice. I got the, yesterday I got the Shock Top.
Oh, Shock Top pumpkin. Yeah.
It's the most amazing thing I've ever had. And it really, you know, because a lot of these October, you know, that's what beers don't really have, like a, they taste okay. But this, you know, you have pumpkin beer that claims to be like a pumpkin beer, but it's just really nothing like a pumpkin beer. This was almost like drinking a pumpkin pie, but not sweet. But it had just the right spice and all that sort of stuff. So it was awesome. So this beer that is by the same company, and it's called Raspberry Wheat. So I'm good. It's these beers are, I guess, what they call a Belgian white. Or whatever.
Yeah, well, typical Shock Top is a Belgian wit beer, right? You know, if you really want to taste if you really want to taste what Belgian beer is, the best thing in the world is to get Belgian beer.
Oh yeah.
I'll bet you what with you living in civilization, what is that, Bevmart or whatever?
Bevmo.
Yeah, Bevmo. Oh man, I'll bet. Look for the Belgian beers that are like 11 and 12 that are 11 and 12% alcohol and come in champagne bottles.
I have more beer than I thought I did. That's hilarious. But it's like, it's one of those things, you know, when you have to decide, like, between buying groceries or keeping your lights on or, buying clothes for your kids, it's, you know, these are decisions that nobody should have, nobody that goes to work every day should have to make those kind of decisions.
No.
Now, if you're sitting on your ass, and I'm not even talking about the people who are unemployed, and it's not because of anything that they're doing, they've been laid off or whatever. No, I'm just talking about those people who we all know who don't give a damn, and I'm not even talking about living off the government dole or anything like that. They just don't care. They're off the grid. So if they have to live hand to mouth, so be it, because they choose to do that. But the average American does not choose to have to live hand to mouth. They do not. They want to get out and go to work. They want to take care of their families. They want to do good. But the way these Republicans, the Republicans, or whatever the hell we're going to call them today, I have never, like I said, maybe it's my naivete or what have you, that I still think there's good in people. But these people are, you know, they're making me change my mind. That there's just no good in these people. They don't give a damn. They are evil. They are absolutely out and out evil. And they are sitting around licking their chops. What did you call it? The looting of America?
Yes.
We are being robbed. You know what I went through for $4,000 or $5,000, go to jail, all that other stuff. And then these motherfuckers, and I, you know, I've been good lately. I haven't really...
Yeah, that's your first one of the night.
These bastards are living, you know, the banksters are sitting around mad because they don't get, you know, their $3 or $4 billion bonuses. And they're mad about that while people like you and me are, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to make it from one day to the next. I don't get it. And I am disgusted with our president because I just don't understand what is he thinking, or is he not thinking? Does he care about the people? Does he care that most people have no way of functioning? That, you know, one of your callers who said that he's losing his insurance, and, you know, because he has pre-existing conditions, he's not even going to bother trying to get any more. What is that?
Reality?
Why is that acceptable in this country? Why are these people, these teabags, these freaking morons, these idiots, these losers, these...
Because we have not been as noisy as the baggers were, okay? We don't show up to political rallies with guns strapped on, all right?
Right.
It's true. The Republican Party went through a purge, just like some are talking about with the Democrats, including me. And what they got out of that purge were the teabaggers.
God help us.
You know, that article that I mentioned in talking with Sandra, goodbye to all that. You know, he points out, and, you know, you really can't, you ignore something like this at your peril. This individual, his name is Mike Lofgren.
Mike Lofgren?
Yeah, he's a former congressional staffer. He says, to those millions of Americans who have finally begun paying attention to politics and watched with exasperation the tragic comedy of the debt ceiling extension, it may have come as a shock that the Republican Party is so full of lunatics. To be sure, the party, like any political party on earth, has always had its share of crackpots like Robert K. Dornan or William E. Dannemeyer. But the crackpot outliers of two decades ago, and this goes hand in hand with something David in Tennessee once observed, and I'll tie this together in a minute. But the crackpot outliers of two decades ago have become the vital center of today. Steve King, Michelle Bachmann, Paul Brown, Patrick McHenry, Virginia Fox, Louis Gohmert, Alan West. The congressional directory now reads like a casebook of lunacy. And what David in Tennessee said a while back, Tracy, was that, you know, back in the 60s, if you wanted to be a John Bircher or a Klansman, largely similar folks, right-wing, hate-filled, murderous, if you wanted to be one of those and you wanted to spread your poison around, you had to sit there huffing mimeograph fumes, running off your stupid little tracts.
Yes.
Well, in 2011, the teabaggers are those people. And they've got the internet. And they've got their very own worldwide television network. The other thing is back in the 60s, if you were one of those people, you only talked about how you really, really felt.
Around how the other people that felt the same way.
Bingo. Now it's out in the street.
You know, the stuff that is going on now, no way, no how, no way could they get away with this stuff back in the day. Calling people coons?
Yeah.
What? Well, we both know that most of the people that are on, that are using government benefits are not, it tickles me how black people are always the blame for everything, you know, and, you know, we're the ones that are using up all the benefits. Oh, besides it, the Hispanic people also. But our percentages are so small that we do not make up as large of a demographic when it comes to welfare benefits as, I don't know.
Well, exactly that. And even beyond that, Tracy, I want to hammer this point home again. Those benefits that he called people coons over are what's holding up this tottering, teetering economy right now. This country, the retail sector of this country is running on food stamps.
And remember how long, when I first started calling the show, that's one of the first things that I talked about. You know, they're talking about all these cuts to benefits of food stamps and stuff like that. Food stamps is what's and it's what you were saying about, and I'm so glad I got on about the food stamps, because, like you said, restaurants, and not even restaurants, are taking EBT, that's, you know, electronic benefit transfer. It's not real restaurants that are taking EBT. It's Wendy's. It's McDonald's. It's, you know, Burger King.
Right, which has a dual effect. One, it sucks away, in a country that is pandemically obese, it ensures that it will get more so.
Well, exactly. As I said,
and it sucks away the sales of food items for, actual fresh food, whether it be organic or not, okay? And because it takes a massive corporate effort to do this, it means that that mom-and-pop dim sum shop can't.
Gone.
Can't, and they are therefore gone.
Because they're not going to be able to compete with McDonald's and Burger King and the like.
Oh, no. And remember, we're going to do this on $3 a day.
Well, it's the same thing how Walmart drove out all the small mom-and-pop businesses around the country. It's the same thing. We're going to be forced to only be able, the only places that we're going to be able to eat eventually. And I'm, you know, as much.
much as I love being alive, I don't want to. I just hope I'm not alive to see this, and I'm hoping that my, you know, like I said, that my Pollyanna will kick in and that everything will be okay. But I'm looking at all these places. It's like, and I'm part of the horribly obese. You know, well, I'm not horribly obese, but I've definitely weigh at least 50 pounds overweight, at least. And it's like, because it's just so much easier to drive in, especially for what I do for a living. Because the problem is, Bob, if I get out my cab, I miss a call, I have to start all over again. So what do? I drive through McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, you know, all these places, so I won't lose my spot in line. Now, there's things that I can do. I'm going to have to start packing lunches. There's a lot of things I can do, and I'm going to need to start doing. But the bottom line is, they are increasingly making it hard for everyday people to function without having to, you know, have to be part of, you know, kowtow to our corporate pastor. I'm just saying.
Yeah. By the way, Jack just wrote in from Shreveport, Tracy. He says, yes, the president did mention infrastructure. I don't know what percent of the package it would be, though. Well, it's some portion of that 40% that's actual spending when 60% of it is
tax cuts.
Right.
What do they think? Like you said, I love it what you call it, magical thinking.
No, that's not my phrase. I mean, that's a real live, honest to God addiction therapy phrase.
It is just because all these people are just. Did I ever tell you I came up with this thing? It's called, I was playing around with somebody and I call it SOS. And it, of course that's the distress signal, but what I call SOS is stuck on stupid.
Right.
And people are stuck on stupid. And it's getting, like you said, back, you know, when Michelle Bachman and her ilk were just that little fringe and we can laugh about them, it's like, you know, I remember, you know, like I said, I wasn't part of anything political until 4 years ago. And I kind of remember the Michelle Bachman jokes, party hard, you know, crazy lady. And, you know, I would laugh. I had no idea who she is. And like you said, all of a sudden these people are waking up. But the thing is it too late? Do you think people...
Well, no, that's the ultimate question I'm asking, Tracy. Because there seems to be a groundswell of feeling in progressive communities that Barack Obama is no progressive. I tend to agree. I think he is being exactly the president he wants to be.
This is the man, like you said...
He is a center-right Democrat. Because in large part, that's where the Democratic Party has been dragged by virtue of a combination of media... And cravenness and cowardice and public ignorance. That's what he is. Okay? He thinks that what he proposed tonight is a great damned idea. All right?
He's probably kicking it. Does he still smoke? Is he still smoking Newport? He's probably sitting back in the Oval Office, kicking back, smoking him.
Not in the Oval Office.
Well, not in the Oval Office. Well, back where is
Michelle, whip that ass if he did.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, look, I think what you were saying about primary, you know, it's not going to do us any good to primary anybody against Barack Obama. But what about primarying people against these other crazy people and getting them the hell out of office?
Yeah. I think the strongest message is not to primary Barack Obama. The strongest message is to not vote for Barack Obama in the primary.
Exactly.
Go and vote for whoever else down the slate you want to, but you leave his name blank. Because you know what? If he's got no competition and he gets less votes, that's scary.
That's scary.
Because you don't know who those people are. Whereas if you've got, Al Gore or whoever the flavor of the day is running against him in the primary, then you say, well, you know, those are those people. But if it's just people leaving his name blank and there's no opposition, they don't know who you are. They just know that you voted down slate and you left him blank. All they know is you're pissed.
Well, I'm pissed about the fact that of all the states, the whole, you know, in all the cities, the whole Democratic National Convention,
you hold it in a right to work state?
Yeah, that's how is that not just a finger in labor's eye?
To help, you know, when I, you know, did help with the campaign, I was working at the, what is it, the Brotherhood of...
Oh, gracious, Tracy, I got to get out of here. I've let the clock get away from me. Take care.
I'll wait.
Bye now. I really do. I hope to be with you again tomorrow night. Lots to think about between now and then, huh? Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Rick Smith is next. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.